Reading comes from Mark's Gospel, chapter 9, verses 30 to 37. They went on from there and passed through Galilee. Jesus did not want anyone to know it, for he was teaching his disciples, saying to them, "The Son of Man is to be betrayed into the human hands, and they will kill him, and 3 days after being killed, he will rise again." But they did not understand what he was saying, and they were afraid to ask him. Then they came to Capernaum, and when he was in the house, he asked them, "What were you saying? What were you arguing about on the way?" But they were silent, for on the way they argued with one another about who was the greatest. He sat down, called the 12, and said to them, "Whoever wants to be first must be last of all and servant of all." Then he took a little child and put it among them, and taking it in his arms, he said to them, "Whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me welcomes not me, but the one who sent me." Praise be the word of the Lord. Amen.
Thank you. Thank you, Peter. This is one of those passages that illustrates the absolute honesty of the New Testament, because it shows up the disciples in all their flaws. Here's Jesus trying to tell them something important, trying to tell them of an event that will change the world, trying to tell them about his forthcoming death and resurrection. And they didn't understand what he was saying. And so instead, they argued amongst themselves as they were walking. They argued amongst themselves about who was the greatest. And please note, they weren't arguing about which of the great religious teachers or prophets were the greatest in history. They were discussing which one of them, the 12 disciples, was the greatest. And probably not saying, "No, you're the greatest. No, you're the greatest. No, 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 it must be you." More likely, I suspect, "No, I'm greater than you. I'm one of Jesus' favorites. I get to go with him on the mountain. I get to do this with him. I'm the greatest." If that's the case, then really they're rather like schoolboys, and maybe that's doing a disservice to schoolboys. And remarkably, most of these men went on to be prominent leaders in the early church. And we know they were embarrassed, because when Jesus asked them what they were discussing, they were silent. You can imagine all 12 of them staring at their sandals with red faces, hoping no one would own up and get them in trouble. Jesus wants them to be discussing some of the important things he's been telling them about, but instead they're having petty arguments about nothing of consequence. So after Jesus found his disciples arguing about childish things, he gently challenged them to rethink their priorities. He asked them instead to look at a child and there find true greatness. Now, I'd like a volunteer from If any of our children here, I think we've got three children here this morning, would any of them like to come and help me demonstrate this? Arthur, would you like to? Do you want to come to the front? Yes, well, come here. Arthur, you've brought your grandma, haven't you? And, or do you get called Nana?
Grandma.
And, and it's grandma's special day today, isn't it? Yeah. What day is it today?
Can you talk? What is it?
Well, I'll tell them. Jane here is, it's Jane's birthday today, and she's 60. So... did say I might embarrass you, so yeah, but I didn't think you'd actually come to the front. I mean, that was just asking for it, really. So Jesus' friends were wondering who was the greatest, right? That was their argument. Who is the greatest? And what Jesus did was he basically took a child and put that child among them. Let's say he put the child on a pedestal. Would you like to get up on this? On this pedestal here, and he said, right, you want to know who's the greatest among you? This is the greatest. This child is the greatest. But don't get too big-headed, because why would Jesus say that? Why would Jesus say that children are the greatest? What characteristics do children bring that we can perhaps learn from? Sorry?
Innocence.
Yes, innocence. Okay, well, I won't explain what that means, but I mean, any other characteristics?
Trust.
Yeah, innocence, trust. Anything else?
Curiosity.
Yes, the ability to ask questions. Yeah. Do you ever ask questions, Arthur? Yeah. Do you ever say, why? So we've got innocence, trust, curiosity. What else is great about children?
Willingness to listen.
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah. Anything else? Dependence, yeah, that reliance on the person who's looking after you. Maybe Jesus wants us to find a reliance, a dependence on God. And that's part of trust, isn't it? What else is great about you? Love, yes. Love, forgiveness. Do you forgive people easily? If they say sorry, do you forgive them? Yeah. Good. And I think really to take joy in life, to be able to just take joy in really simple things, to take joy in a toy or a game or just, you know, some sweets, just whatever it is, just whatever little thing they have in front of them, to just take joy in that. And I think there's so much... we forget, you know. I mean, because we've all been children. Would you believe they've all been children before? Yeah? Yeah. Can you imagine them as children when they were little? Yeah. And so it's maybe it's something that, you know, life wears out of us. Maybe it's something that we grow out of because we think we've got to be more mature or responsible, and maybe we have, but there's something about those characteristics of children that Jesus doesn't want us to lose, or he wants us to remember. I think humility is one of those things as well. That children generally don't think they are the greatest because they live in a world that doesn't really treat them that way. And maybe humility is something that we need to learn from. But, Arthur, I will just say this. If you ever decide, oh, well, I'm the greatest, and then you start acting like that, then actually you can come down off that step. Because that's not the sort of greatness Jesus wants. Or if you think, yes, I'm the greatest, and then you stop being loving or forgiving because you think you can treat other people as less, then you can come down off that step because that's not the sort of greatness Jesus wants. But if you remember to try and be like the sort of person Jesus wants us to be, and you keep all of your childlike qualities as well, then really, I think you would be quite a great person indeed. Yeah? Yeah? Is that what you want to be? Yeah. Good, good. Well, thank you, Arthur. Thank you. You can, yeah. Yeah. Do you want to get down from there? There we go. All right. Good, good. So who is the greatest? How do we judge who is the greatest? When we look at the people around us, do we automatically make judgments about them? Do we do what the disciples did and start to rank people in our minds or put them in categories? I want to suggest that we shouldn't judge, that we don't always know what's going on in other people's lives. I'll give you an example that I've managed to force into this sermon, and I hope you'll understand. Yesterday, I went to see my team, Newcastle United, play at Fulham. But the only ticket I could get was among the Fulham supporters. So you understand my anxiety going there. Not dressed in anything that would give me away. Although the fact that Fulham wear black and white as well means the fact I wasn't actually made me stand out. But I was sitting at the opposite end of the ground to all of the noisy Geordies in black and white stripes. The Fulham fans around me were, I noticed, actually just like us in many ways. Different accents, in fact, many different accents. But like all crowds, they were a wonderful mix of people and backgrounds. Some of them may have noticed my lack of enthusiasm and joy when Fulham scored 3 goals against Newcastle's 1. And if they turned to look at me, they may have wondered why I seemed so downcast and only applauded with the polite manner of someone watching a poorly produced amateur show, which was arguably how Newcastle played. The lads next to me may have wondered why I really didn't want a big hug off them at the end of the match. Maybe they thought, looking at me, that I didn't understand the rules of the game. Maybe I didn't understand that Fulham were winning. But no, I understood that quite well. Maybe they thought I was from another country or another planet. Well, thankfully, nobody asked. Nobody put an arm around me and tried to explain what a wonderful thing was happening. They just... they just left me. They let me be. And I was quite glad of that. But I wonder if they were making a judgment about me as well. And as I left the ground, I watched people leaving who had been, you know, momentarily happy. And I thought, but I wonder what lives they're going back to. And I wonder if that moment of happiness was just a small part of their lives. And actually, I would never know what lives they were going back to, what situations. My point is this: we don't always know what people's lives consist of. We don't know what struggles they face. But sometimes, to treat them without judgment, to give them a friendly smile and an offer of help or an offer of support, can go a long way to help someone get through the day. Jesus invites us not to judge others, as we can't possibly know the full story of their lives, but to seek to serve. I wonder if you've ever sat in a crowd or sat in church and thought, nobody knows what's going on for me, and I will just try and put on a brave face. Jesus says, whoever wants to be the first must be the last of all and servant of all. Service is one of the four priorities of the calling of the Methodist Church. By being a good neighbor in the community, challenging injustice, and using our resources to support the church in its mission in the world. In this community, there's a lot that we do, an awful lot, as a church, to serve. And there's a lot that we're doing too through churches together. We are a serving church. And there's always more, of course, that we could do. But thank you for being that serving church. And I know that you will reach out to people without judgment. In the past year, we've had the joy of supporting the Bauer House, who give their care and counseling without judgment, no matter how good or important somebody appears. We never know what is going on in their lives. No matter how troubled or difficult we find someone, we never know what they've been through to lead them to that point. Some people are heroes just for getting through that day. At the service the other night at the Bauer House service, I reflected on how Jesus only gave them the commandment to love one another after he had washed their feet. He gave them the commandment after they had seen it in action. And they had to see it in action to understand it. That love of God, which stoops to wash our feet, which loves us regardless. We often forget that he gladly washed the feet of Judas that day, knowing exactly what he would do. And he asks us to do likewise in many different ways to people that we do not know their situations, but they are loved by God. When we see it in action, we learn how to be a disciple, and when we receive it from one another, we know what love is, the sort of love Jesus meant. So Jesus teaches us that the way of his kingdom is the way of serving one another, not judging one another. To be childlike, not childish. To follow him, we must be prepared to give up some of our time, our money, our preferences, and our prejudices. Taking up our cross to follow him is not easy. But whenever we do so, lives can be transformed and a little bit of his kingdom comes to earth, perhaps even to those who need it most. Amen.